away all the pain of yesterday. I know my kingdom awaits, and they've forgiven my mistakes. I'm coming home, I'm coming home. Tell the world I'm coming.
I'm back where I belong. I never felt so strong,
yeah. I'm back,
I'm feeling like there's nothing I can't try. And if you with me, put your hands high.
Put your hands high. You've been lost a life before.
Hey. This one's
and
if you with me, put your hands high.
Your dreams are filled, you're rocking with the best.
Hey.
I'll be on the song.
I hear the tears of a clown. I hate that song. I always feel like they're talking to me when it comes on.
Come on.
Another day, another dawn. Another Keisha, nice to meet you, get the math, I'm gone. What am I supposed to do when the club lights come on? It's easy to be Puff, but it's harder to be Sean. What if my twins ask me why I ain't married a mom? Damn, how do I respond? What if my son stares with a face like my own and says he wants to be like me when he's grown? Shit, but I ain't finished grown. Another night, the inevitable prolong.
Let's go.
Another day, another dawn.
Come on.
Just tell Keisha and Teresa I'll be better in the mold. Another lie that I carry on. I need to get back to the place I
belong.
Come
on. I'm coming home.
I'm coming home.
Tell the world I'm coming home.
Yeah.
Let the rain wash away all the pain of yesterday.
Ain't no
rain.
Check this out. A house is not a home, I hate this song. Is a house really a home when your loved ones is gone? And niggas got the nerve to blame you for it. And you know you would've took the bullet if you saw
right.
it. But you felt it, and still feel it. And money can't make up for it, or conceal it. But you deal with it, and you keep ballin'. Ride some liquor, playboy, and we keep ballin'. Baby, we've been living in sin, cause we've been really in love, but we've been living as friends.
Yeah.
So you've been a guest in your own home. It's time to make your house your own. Pick up the phone.
Coming home, I'm coming home. Tell the world that I'm coming home.
I'm coming home.
Let the rain wash away all the pain of yesterday. I know my kingdom awaits, and they've forgiven my mistakes.
Thank you.
I'm coming home. Tell the world that I'm
almost home. Check this out.
Yeah.
Home.
No stopping us now, I love that song. Whenever it comes on, it makes me feel strong. I thought I told you that we won't stop till we back cruising through Harlem. These old blocks is what made me, saved me, drove me crazy. Drove me away, then embraced me, forgave me for all of my shortcomings. Welcome to my homecoming. Yeah, it's been a long time coming. A lot of fights, a lot of scars, a lot of bottles, a lot of cars, a lot of ups, a lot of downs. Made it back, lost my dog.
Miss you big.
But here I stand.
Come on,
a better man.
Don't stop.
Thank you, Lord.
I'm coming home. I'm coming home.
That was Coming Home, a fun play, because today here at Tufts is homecoming.
Woo!
And just a reminder, this is Mona and Noah Save the World, and you're listening to 91.5 FM WMFO, Medford Tufts Freeform Radio.
And it's been so, so long since Noah and I have been on the show together because Noah was away last week. No. Yes. No, it was away last week. I was away. There we go. Is my mic now on?
I think so.
Okay. All I was saying was that it's been a while since Noah and I have been together because I was away 2 weeks ago and Noah was away last week. So this is kind of a homecoming to Mona and Noah Save the World.
It is nice to be back.
It is so great to be back. And we have a guest here with us.
Yes, we do. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes, hello. I'm Jack. I'm Noah's boyfriend. I've been on the show before.
Oh, he is an honored guest. So honored we love having him on the show.
I appreciate it. So yeah, I'm here visiting Noah. Noah was gone last week visiting me.
Yeah,
it's very good to be here. This is one of my favorite parts of coming. I get to see Mona. I get to do the show.
I love Jack. I'm a big fan of Jack. I love Noah, too. And to be with the two of them, who they also love each other, it's just a lot.
It's a great place.
Just a lot of good vibes. But yeah, today at dinner, you know, not that we didn't know what we were going to talk about, but let's say hypothetically we didn't know what we were going to talk about. We're like, what were we going to talk about? And then suddenly I was like, homecoming.
Mona's like, I'm so clever for this.
I do feel clever because I think, you know, homecoming is a fun, sporty day on college campuses. But if you think about, like, the idea of homecoming and coming home, and then it's like, what is home? Where is home? Mm-hmm. When do you go home? What is coming home? And of course, that song is just an absolute classic for our generation.
There is actually, we discovered a version of that song that is just the very slow I'm coming home, but it is also party homecoming, so we didn't want to disappoint any listeners.
Of course, you know, we gotta balance those,
keep things exciting, but
maybe
also
we'll play, maybe we'll
emotional.
Play the we should play the sad version later on.
Why? It's a Saturday night, Mona. Who is here to be sad?
Because you're the one, when I was like, no, let's not play that, you were like, coming home can be sad.
Coming home
and
can.
You should say
like,
that.
Yeah, thank you, Jack.
Okay.
Like having Jack on the show.
We will have plenty of sad music that is not that song tonight to talk about the more...
What sad music?
I think some of these songs are kind of sad. Yeah. Although, I'm now looking at this playlist. Mona.
None of them are sad.
One of them is sad.
Which one is sad?
The listeners will find out.
Okay.
Stay tuned.
Stay tuned. We have a really important insight from Rod, my brother.
Ooh.
He said, talk about Spider-Man Homecoming.
Oh, thanks, Rod.
Which, honestly, I would love to discuss.
Yeah, I've seen
Are
it.
Are you Marvel fans, both of you?
Yes,
of you?
But which one was that? Is that?
That's the most recent Spider-Man.
That's the Tom Holland. No, the most recent one is Far From Home.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you're right.
Because it was his homecoming into the MCU, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, for y'all non-woke Marvel people. But then he was out of his home at the MCU. I don't know if you guys followed up on that drama.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Holland was cut from the MCU.
Yeah, so tragic.
But then he's back.
Surprise.
How could they ditch Tom Holland? Tom Holland.
I know.
You really can't.
It was like my parents were genuinely so alarmed at how deeply upset my brother and I were. They were like, my dad was like, this is pathetic. You guys need to like go study. And we were like, you don't understand. Like Tom Holland, like
the voice of a generation.
Yes,
gone.
Thank you.
In seconds.
Thank you.
Wow.
Yeah, terrific.
I'm so glad we're having these really meaningful conversations about homecoming.
Listen, I mean, I think like home means a lot of things means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. And I feel like a lot of people do find their home in these fandoms, which is such interesting idea to me. I don't know, because it's like a lot of them are virtual and you don't really
very
know the
fantastical
people, and all you have in common is that you like this thing.
Mm-hmm.
But like,
I feel like something, maybe it's just me, but I feel like very often the fandoms that people really get deeply involved with and connected to are typically fandoms of things that have a very surreal and fantastical element.
Mm-hmm.
Like people aren't getting like, there's no huge fandom for like NCIS, you know. People care about these things that allow them to be transported away, and like by investing in them they sort of like have this outlet. I think
that's such a good point,
something I'm thinking about.
I never thought of it that way. Because I guess when you think about like TV shows, okay, but would you say like The Office has a fandom?
I was just about to bring up The Office.
Okay, I guess there are some exclusions.
But I feel like it's a different style. Like, yeah, it's a different. It's a
like, I feel like people don't really.
You know, one writes fan fiction for The Office.
You're definitely wrong about that. I'm sure there are literally thousands of fanfics about The Office.
Yeah, that's
but
fair.
But it's like a different thing, like culturally.
It's a, yes,
I think
it's a very
different.
Different like type of fandom.
Yeah, it's less escapist.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's more like a, you just enjoy the story rather than like you actually, like no one pictures themselves being.
Yeah, no one's like, wow, I wish I got to go into work and see Dwight and Jim.
Well, I wish I got to go into work and see Dwight and like, Jim, but.
Cool. Okay, okay.
But it's different
okay.
than the people who are like, if only I got a Hogwarts letter. Like,
yeah.
I did see something on
Harry Potter, the biggest fandom. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No. Very important.
Just
Harry Potter.
We built a whole amusement park.
And Harry
about
Potter
it.
Deals with a lot of themes of home.
Yeah.
You know? Because his home isn't really with the Dursleys.
He really doesn't have much of a home at all.
I mean, Hogwarts is not Hogwarts' is home? Ron and Hermione?
Like, I think it has a lot of the homey aspects, but I don't think a college is ever going to be your home because it's always temporary.
Well, first of all, they're like 12 years old.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's not fair. A college. But yeah, you're
but
right.
But can the
no,
people
you
that you meet in college become like your home?
Can people be home?
Because like
this
I don't know.
It's kind of like the family episode we did. Like, yeah. Can your friends be your family? But can your friends be your home?
It is sort of. Well, I guess there are two iconic moments. Sort of when you get off the airplane and your family's there.
Mm-hmm.
That's when you're like, I'm back home.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also a whole like, I remember like we would go on road trips and like. Drive very late and it'd be like 3 a.m. when we actually got home.
Crack it.
And I feel like I would always wake up like pulling into my driveway and I'd be like,
I'm home.
And like I would go around through the house. For some reason, everything always feels different.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then like you're in bed and you're like, now I'm home.
Yeah.
Did you ever try to like smell what your house smelled like?
Ooh.
Sorry, weird tangent, but I always, because, like, you know how you can't smell your own house, but, like, you go into someone else and you're like,
yes,
hey, this is what
yes,
I
yeah.
would, like, try to figure out, like, what do people that are coming into my house, like, smell. Turns out it's just, like, wood polish. I don't know. I have very old white parents. But, yes, but no, that's, like, totally, it's two different, like, types of home, like a physical and, like, an emotional home mm-hmm. almost.
Well, I think that physical home is so important, and that's why... You know, it's so, like, displacement mm-hmm. and forced migration, and even not forced migration, even just immigration, like, peaceful immigration, even just, like, moving.
Yeah.
Is, those things
jarring.
Are so hard because, like, where you live is such a central component of mm-hmm. home, even with all the complications of that space.
I agree. And Jack and I went to, like, high school together, and we went to high school with a lot of people who had Air Force parents because we were really close to a big Air Force base,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of people moved every like 2 years.
Yeah, no, I was my dad was in the Air Force, and I wouldn't say I like really developed a sense of like home was always with my parents, but like I didn't really develop like a sense of like this place is my home mm-hmm. until he retired, because you do move around so frequently.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you just don't, like, I didn't have, like, friends until I was in, like, high school, because I just never lived anywhere long enough to, like, really develop those. And so, like, that's, like, definitely a very good point.
But now, so do you consider the place you went to high school as, like, your home?
Yeah. I lived in Dover for, like, a very long time. Like, like half of my life, because, like, my parents were old when they had me. But like some kids, if your parents have you when they're like in their 20s, like mm-hmm. normal people, you will just move around probably until you're graduating from high school. So it definitely probably is very difficult to develop that like sense of home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my family moved to where we live now, I think now 11 years ago, which is crazy, but even like a few years ago. So I think once we were there for like 7 or 8 years, it was the longest time my mom had ever lived in a place.
Yeah.
And she was in her 40s.
That's wild.
Because her parents moved around a lot when she was a kid. And then my dad moved around a lot for his job when they were married.
Mm-hmm.
And then they finally, like, quote unquote, settled where we are now. And so all these ideas of, like, your neighbors and, like, it was so funny. Like, after we were there for, you know, 5, 6 years, she was like, I'm watching people age. I've never seen people, I've never seen my neighbors change and develop and age because they've always been so temporary. And like, after, you know, we've lived there for 11 years and like, my dad just became friends with like a new neighbor who they've, you know, they've both lived there for at least 11 years. They've definitely lived there longer. And they're just now like kind of striking a friendship. And it's so crazy to my mom because she's like, wow, like things are changing. Like in this same space, there are like developments after quote unquote so long. And of course, 11 years, some people live in places for like
their whole lives.
Yes, yeah. Their whole lives, yeah.
So are those social connections almost? Because Noah, you're... I feel like your mom definitely hasn't really felt like Delaware is really home, despite the fact that that's where you've lived.
So I lived, we lived in West Virginia for 6 years, and now we moved to Delaware, and we've lived there for 9 years now. But my mom actually just like this past weekend had friends from West Virginia visiting, and I think she is now finally, I think, really starting to make a lot of more of deeper connections and like broaden her friend group in Delaware. But for sure, I think to her, West Virginia is still home in a lot of ways. And me too. I don't know. I see Delaware's home in a lot of ways, but I also see West Virginia as my home in a lot of ways. And every time I go back to West Virginia, I always like try to make a point to like stop by the old house I used to live in.
Aww.
I know.
That's very sweet.
Yeah, it definitely emotional connections to the like physical place where I grew up.
And that's why it's so hard. Again, I mean, I'm just thinking about my own family's experience, but like in diaspora communities, I think it's so hard when you either can't go back to where you're from or just haven't gone back. And then kind of that finding others in that same diaspora and trying to like make a home out of there, because I think, again, I think just the loss of the physical land for you is like really, really difficult. And so I just think, I don't know, I've been reflecting on that because I'm one of the co-presidents of the Persian Students Association. And it's just interesting because it's like the only thing we have in common are where our like parents or grandparents used to live. Some of us, some of the people did, like one of my, what the other co-president lived in Iran until she was like 15. So like she, you know, is Iranian and like another guy too. But most of us are like second generation, you know, but it's still this kind of, kind of primal need to be like, yes. And we like, this is like an important community.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's also like eight of us. Like it's tiny, you know? Yeah. But it feels like
it's good to have that connection with others. Yeah.
Yeah, that's something I was also thinking about with sort of diaspora, is even though you have this like central like theme that is tying you together, this like origin place, ultimately a lot of you probably have very different experiences with like what that means to you.
Oh yeah, that's and a good,
and it's not
point.
Like
that's a really good point.
It's not like one neighborhood like picks up and moves somewhere together. It's like people from all across a place can come together, even if individually those situations were very different. But there's still this like underlying current of unity.
Yeah, and that reminds me of how like it's interesting because I mean I'm just using that this region as an example because it's, you know, what I'm familiar with, but like within the Middle East there's like a lot of tension between different groups and like different nations, different ethnicities, different religions. But in America, with you know, by the time it gets to like second generation, those differences kind of blur out and it's like, oh my god, you're from that region of you're from that broad region of the world, you have a slightly similar thing, like me too. And I remember I was at my friend's graduation party and she's Armenian. And it was a lot of like her Armenian relatives. And I always felt kind of this kinship with her because we were both from, you know, this region of the world and had, it felt like similar families, similar cultures. And when I introduced myself to a lot of her relatives, they would assume I was Armenian. And when I said, oh, actually, no, I'm just a friend from school. Like, I'm actually like Persian, I'm Iranian. They would be like, what? That, who let you in here? Haha, like as a joke, but I just like didn't even occur to me that for older generations there was like tension between these different groups, because in my mind I was like, what do you mean? Like, this person is, like, the only person I know who, like,
yeah.
shares this in common with me. Like, I don't see these interregional tensions at all.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a very long, convoluted way of saying something.
Yeah, I think it's just sort of, I think actually there has been some, a little bit of drama here at Tufts with, like, professors who... teaching like the history of a place or teaching mm-hmm. about culture, and then perhaps they don't have certain experiences that would like really allow them. But also, I don't know, lots of messy op-eds, I think, about sort of what does it mean to like actually be from a place versus like being in the diaspora of a place, and what does like are those comparable, and like do whose experiences, like, should we, like, defer to when trying to understand a place?
Wait, now I'm so curious. So there's professors who are from a diasporic community of a place but haven't experienced that place directly?
Well, yeah, I think the problem was there's a lot of professors who taught culture-esque classes but who would never really actually, who weren't from that place. And although some of them had experienced, like, were, like, maybe second generation, like, had parents from that place, like, they themselves were only part of the diaspora. And so a lot of people were like, does that qualify you to talk about the culture of a place, even if your connections are different? I also, this was a couple weeks ago, so I'm not sure if I'm entirely encapsulating all of the, like, more important ideas of these arguments and these discussions. So
well, I just think that's so interesting, because I've heard the argument of, like, you know, if you have zero connection to that place, maybe you're not the best person to teach about mm-hmm. that place. But I feel like that becomes a very blurry nuance of, well, how yeah. much of a connection can you claim to
obviously that person is not living there now because they are here at yeah. Tufts. So I mean, obviously, it's much different than that. That's, like, a dramatic yeah. example. A lot of people, like, come here for a couple of years to teach, but or really from a place. But still, what are the qualifications?
Interesting.
I don't know. Yeah, no, like, that's, like, a very good thought. And, like, do we want to, like, necessarily go after these people? Like, this isn't necessarily, like, a cultural group, but at, like, the university that I attend, like, the chief diversity officer who, like, handles a lot of the, like, LGBTQ affairs, like, is a, like, older, straight, like, very Baptist woman.
Mm.
And, like, I believe that she fully, like, supports equality of, like, all groups, but, like, we were in an RA training, like, going through, like, LGBTQ community resources, and she, like, continuously used this, like, the LGBTQSA, which she thought meant lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, straight community or alliance, and, like, it was at the point that, like, I had to go up to her after the presentation and be like, obviously, like, the presentation was not hateful, and, like, I appreciate that, well, you're trying to raise awareness, but, like, straight people cannot be part of the community. And, like, part of me wants to say, like, that's a nitpick because you're within the community and you're very involved in these, like, you know, because you're in the community. Mm-hmm. And so, like, am I nitpicking or am I making, like, a fair criticism? So, like, I can see how for, like, a cultural group, like, it might be hard if you're within that group to think, like, is this, like, a real problem or am I, like, being oversensitive? But, like, I do think it's, like, a good conversation to have of, like, how far removed from a community or culture group can you be, like, before you have to kind of, like, sit back and let other people kind of explain it or talk about it.
And it's difficult because a lot of these things we really have no means of controlling, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, like, it feels like, will I just never in my life be able to, like, talk about these things? That doesn't feel mm-hmm. very right, mm-hmm. I feel. Like, it feels like an injustice is being committed that, like, somebody could be like, you cannot talk
yeah.
about this.
Yeah.
But it's also very understandable, like, and I think that's why we just have to, like, frame, like, how our perspectives, like, are achieved, because mm-hmm. I think having an experience that, like, is synonymous with, like, somebody in a community's experience, although not the same experience, like, in some ways does enable you to talk. In my negotiations and conflict resolution class, we read this book called Women Don't Ask, about the means in which typically gender has influenced negotiations. And we were talking in class about, we had this like big conversation. It was a big thing. And the professor asked, I'm trying to remember exactly what, but sort of like, oh, he said, we do simulated negotiations. And he said one time, just sort of randomly, one group was all women and they all actually shared their like bottom lines with each other in the negotiation. And he said, that's the only time I've ever seen people do that was when it was all with a group of women. Oh. Like, why do you think that was just like, he was like, I don't think that's just by chance. I think like there's something more cultural about it and why people would do that. And I tried to like talk about how, in my experience, there was one time where I was like surrounded by other like gay people. And like, I felt so much more comfortable and like so much more open and willing to share and be myself. And somebody was like, well, I don't think you should conflate like the queer and the like feminine experience. I think they're very different things. And I was like, that's fair. I agree with that. I do think probably there's a lot of similarities in those, especially as like a more feminine gay man, I would say.
Well, and it also can just be that like shared kind of experience of being like a more oppressed group,
mm-hmm.
like makes you more willing to work with other members of like that same
mm-hmm.
group.
Mm-hmm.
So like, it might not be the like oh, gay men are like more feminine. It could just be the shared experience of being gay, or like the shared experience of being a woman that helps with that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that's also what's so complicated is like there's so much talk about, you know, like, what's it called? You know, like the kind of collective community mm-hmm. of oppression of like mm-hmm. oppressed
people's
identities,
identities,
and like marginalized identities. And in that rhetoric, you know, there's kind of the idea of empathy and mm-hmm. let's not compare each other's oppression because that's what the oppressor wants us to do. Mm-hmm. They want to turn us against each other. We all need to be united.
Mm-hmm.
But then on the other hand, there's the rhetoric of like just, yeah, like blatant conflation of like,
oh, I had this bad experience, so yeah. I understand your life. And
yeah.
it's like,
no.
I mean, that's, I think, where intersectionality like
yeah.
really shows its face. And it's like, well, yeah, you can have a lot of similar experiences, but
yeah.
every experience that you have is actually still better because like I also have to deal with this other identity that makes life more difficult.
I know, but it's easier said than done, right? I mean, mm-hmm. It's a hard thing to balance because there's just so many different considerations.
And I think it's just hard like, for like human beings to say like, I just cannot know this thing.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like we just like mm-hmm. need to know and we
yeah.
like need to be able to understand. And when
yeah.
people like, sorry, you just like will not and cannot understand this because you will not and cannot have these experiences, or like you have not dealt with this thing your whole life.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, but I want to,
I
could, maybe.
Well,
and it's,
I
like,
think part of that also is, I think it is, I mean, at least in my experience, it is true that the feeling of empathy, just the like the emotional reaction,
mm-hmm.
for me is very helpful, kind of ironically, in then situating like more rationally, if that makes sense. Like if
mm-hmm.
I like if someone, I'm trying to think of like a good like a example, but like if, you know, someone shares like a really like harrowing some story, and then I think, and I have an emotional reaction of, oh my god, that reminds me of the time I went through X, Y, and Z,
mm-hmm.
then I'm able, because of that emotional reaction, I'm better able to be like, oh my god, and if I'm having that emotional reaction about X, Y, and Z,
they must feel
like, I can't even imagine mm-hmm. how they must feel. It's such a more serious situation, and then I'm better able to like understand
mm.
that.
You're not trying to like equate it,
no.
you're just making it relative so
yeah.
you can have a platform
yeah.
to jump off.
But
off,
I do think that a lot of the rhetoric around like, you won't understand this experience, again, is really important in
mm-hmm.
many ways, but has the risk of shutting people out and being like, okay, well then, yeah, I won't even bother with you if I'm never going to be able to understand. Like, okay, bye.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing also with the, like, who's qualified to teach about mm-hmm. what. It's like, is some exposure better than...
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. I think it's... Again, it's so tricky. Like, at my high school, there was a, like, race... It was, like, a race and gender class taught by a black woman who then retired. And then the whole faculty was, like... The white faculty was like, well, I'm not going to teach that class. I'm not going to teach that class. Listen, like... But not for, like... I wouldn't say for noble reasons. I would say they were like, I don't want to go near that. That's going to be... I don't want to get into that controversial area. So my psych teacher, who was a white woman, was like, someone has to teach this class. Like, this is such an important class. And she was like, I will sign up to do the work to teach the class. And the class had really mixed reviews because some people learned a lot and other people were like, this white woman really doesn't understand my experience.
Mm-hmm.
But so the question is,
does a school not offer the class?
Should she have just been like, okay, well, too bad. You know, it was really, she really put in so much work, but it then the, again, like, was, mm-hmm. I don't know.
It's tricky. I know, I will never be an astronaut. Like, I think maybe the solution is we need to get better at, like, coping with things that we just... Like, I will never be an ice skater or a gymnast because, like, I did not start when I was 5 years old. And, like, that ship has sailed and doors close in our lives. And I think maybe it might be helpful to just say, this is the life that I have and I'm going to do... with it what I can, but there are things I cannot do, and you don't have to feel bad. You can maybe feel a little sad, like something's missing, but I don't know. I think that's a possible path forward.
I don't think that we always need to, like, understand, like, an entire group.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think it's entirely possible for, like, someone from a different group to, like, understand a person's individual experience.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think, like, I don't think any of us could ever understand, like, necessarily, like, the experience of, like, African-American people in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
because we've never lived that. But, like, I think if each of us had, like, one person that we were very close friends with and over the course of that relationship, I think if they wanted to share it with us, we could understand their individual,
mm-hmm.
like, feelings. But I think we maybe have this, like, perception of, like, if, like, I have, like, one friend who's a member of this group and, like, I know this to be their experience, that must be therefore
mm-hmm.
everyone else's experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's kind of that, like, then you go, well, that's not mine, so you don't understand the whole, like, group. And so maybe we need to take, like, a view of almost, like, you can understand the people in your lives that
mm-hmm.
share that with you, but that does not necessarily extrapolate to the entire
mm-hmm.
culture or
mm-hmm.
ethnic group.
But also somebody saying, oh, that doesn't apply to my group. Maybe that person also is overgeneralizing about what their group is.
Mm-hmm.
Because a different group can be very different in different places. Like,
yeah.
the gay scene at Tufts is very different from the gay scene at Widener. And
mm-hmm.
if I were describing the different scenes, there would be a lot to compare, and I wouldn't want to, like, I think if I gave a lecture here at Tufts about the gay scene and someone from Widener came, they'd be like, that completely did not encapsulate
it's
my
very
experience.
Different here. I'm 20% of the gay population of Widener. Like, I'm
Yay.
Not kidding. There are 5 that I know about, and, like, it's...
What?
Yeah, no, it's a whole thing. And
That's
like, so coming
very
here,
few people.
Coming here, like, I almost have, like, I'm obviously, like, a very, like, straight presenting, like, like, I look very oppressive. Like, I just do, for all of our listeners. But, like, so, like, we come here, and especially, you know, living in Crafts House, sometimes, like, I'm almost a little shocked. I'm like, oh, like, look at all this going on. Like, and, like, it's fine, but it's such a different, like, scene. And, like, if I had not been exposed to it, I would never know about it.
Mm-hmm.
So, like... it just shows the, like, difference within one community. Like, there is,
yeah.
like, there is, like, nothing, like, not that it's, like, homophobic at Widener, but there's just nothing gay because there's 5 of us. Like, we just kind of intermingle into, like, the straight communities, and that's how it goes. Like, Yeah, it's very, I feel very straight here and very gay at Widener, if that makes sense.
That totally makes sense. I feel that a lot with, not obviously with gayness, but with race mm-hmm. and stuff. Like, mm-hmm. I feel, or, like...
Absolutely.
Americanness, or, mm-hmm. I don't know.
And, like, do we, like, change, like, the scripts that we use mm-hmm. depending on where we are?
Mm-hmm. That's so true. Jack... You're a wise man.
This is Soch 105.
We were
thanks, Dr. Weiss.
We were a little more somber, so I will hopefully try to capture some of that energy with a song, which I personally think is somber. It's Home by Phillip Phillips.
Oh, okay.
This is what
we'll
I was...
We'll talk about what we think of the song after.
Yes, yes, yes. Please enjoy.
Hold on. As we roll down this unfamiliar road, and although this wave is stringing us along, just know you're not alone, 'cause I'm gonna make this place yours.
Whether you're taking your cell phone with you on a walk, in your car, or to a civil protest, you should know your legal rights. The U.S. Supreme Court unanimously ruled that police must obtain a warrant to search a person's cell phone. However, a phone without a passcode can readily be searched by anybody holding it, and a Virginia court recently ruled that a defendant can be compelled to unlock their device that's protected by only their fingerprint. So consider using a key code, password, and setting your phone's lock screen to lock very quickly when no one is using it, particularly if you expect to be in a potentially violent situation. While the police can't legally force you to unlock your phone, they can ask you to. And if you do that, you've forfeited your rights. The correct answer to a cop's request to search you, your vehicle, your phone, or your home is no, officer. I do not consent to a search. Thank you. Finally, remember that the police can always ask a judge to search for a search warrant, so think carefully about what's being stored on your phone, including photos, context, contacts, and app data. You can learn more about your rights from the Electronic Freedom Foundation on the web at EFF.org.
Thank you for that, Jack. Our right to have our own spaces, especially our homes, that are free from the police, and from surveillance, I think is very important, and something that too often goes underchecked.
Yes.
Police cannot enter your home without a search warrant.
And you can give them consent to only search certain parts of your home. So if you're a roommate, don't give them consent to search your roommate's room. So you can search everything in the house except that room. And they have to respect that.
Or,
fun fact,
just don't let the police inside your home because they are not allowed in if they do not have a warrant, and you have the right to say no.
Even better. Good yes. job, Noah.
You heard it here, hopefully not first. There are plenty of online legal services, advices. Be sure to check out and stay up to date on your rights, because they matter.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, that song, to me, is about sort of setting off into a new place and with somebody, but everything around you is now foreign and new. So I think it's somber and emotional because it's all about this. And I think a driving factor of many of the conversations we have on the show, but especially tonight, is sort of change. Because I think what makes coming home so interesting and like emotional is that things typically change from one time to the next, and you've changed because you've had these new experiences, or your home has changed because time has passed and life goes on, and so to me that's about like the change of being in a new place for the first time. And even though you have somebody you know and who is familiar, you're in a completely new setting.
See, I think, like, what makes a place home is the experiences that you've had there. Like, if anyone, like, out there, like, think back to, like, where you consider your home. And, like, at least to me, like, the reasons that I consider it to be home is because of, like, what I know I've done there, if mm-hmm. that makes sense. Like, there's nothing special about, like, Dover, Delaware, like, mm-hmm. at all. Like, legitimately, don't go there. It's terrible. But, like, what is special about it to me is the experiences that I've had there and who I know there and, like, the memories.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I think, like, kind of home can be, like, home can be wherever you make it. Like, the longer that I've been at college, like, the shorter I've wanted to, like, kind of, like, be at home, because all of my, like, friends are not there. And so the more you get, like, invested into the social connections elsewhere, like, the more that becomes your home. And so I think it definitely, like, can change over time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm back.
Welcome back, thank Mona. It's good to have you back home.
Oh! Yeah, I think what you guys said was brilliant and wise.
I'm glad you think so.
That song really, I think it's interesting, yeah. I think I never really listened to it.
Jack and Mona were like, "The song is happy. What are you talking about?" And I was like, "This is not a happy song."
Because we don't listen to lyrics.
Upbeat,
yeah. Who has the time?
Okay, I feel like this is a whole other episode we need to do about songs where the lyrics are like the opposite of the vibe. Because like that song, hey, I keep reading about, like, there keeps being articles about it, about how they like purposefully wrote it to prove that people wouldn't care what the lyrics were and just wanted an upbeat, catchy song. And the lyrics are all about how, like, his relationship is horrible and how the audience doesn't care because all they want is an upbeat song.
I mean, he got us. He really got us.
My question is, who has time to write these articles about, like,
that's also
just
really
music? What is that job?
I mean, BuzzFeed sometimes, you know, BuzzFeed will have articles that are like, Taylor Swift's cat has always been a symbol of whatever. And I'm like,
I'm sorry.
What? Like, who gave you money to write this? And also, even I'm in a sociology class where, like, just some of the readings we have, I'm like, you have too much time on your hands.
No, absolutely.
One of the articles started off with, like, it was basically like, heterosexual relationships can be difficult, but everyone always thinks it's an accident, like it's just chance or an accident that they're difficult. But they're actually systematically created to be difficult to reproduce the family structure. And I was like, okay, so what you're saying is relationships are hard. Yes, thank you. Like, we all know.
Yeah.
Like, you just, who, like, you have too much time on your hands. Like, what are you talking about? I left out the stuff about the Oedipus complex because that was also a part of it.
That's definitely.
Yeah.
Oh, anybody deferring to Freud, I'm sorry.
I have been.
You have too much time on your hands.
I have been assigned an actual reading from Freud, and I just, like,
and you
couldn't
lived?
Get myself to read it. No, I just couldn't. I couldn't do it.
Good for you.
I was like, I can't justify reading it.
Yeah, I agree. I, like, used to have some you takes. Know? Nowadays, I'm like, this is a
like,
bunch of a mess. This is a mess.
I don't have time for this.
This is not. This doesn't help anybody.
I know. I was like, I just.
Sorry, neo-Freudians.
Yeah.
Why?
You're not doing anything.
I mean, it is an interesting. It's like, it was an interesting few classes where we were, like, legitimately discussing his ideas, and we were all like, sir, none of us believe in this.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, you're right, but it was so influential. Whether or not it was remotely accurate, like, it was supremely influential, so we have to study it. I was like, okay.
I mean, I guess it's good to get everyone, you know, talking, get all the juices going. If what you made was just a waste of time, we can stop talking about it at some point.
Yeah. Well, that's a whole other thing about, like, is talking about popular false ideas, like, useful or not? I feel like, Noah, we've had this discussion a lot about, mm-hmm. like, is it legitimizing the stupid idea?
Yeah.
Or is it helping to deconstruct it? Like, where's the line,
yeah.
guys? Where's the line?
I think it's, yeah. Will the people listening to you adopt those beliefs? Mm-hmm. If the answer is yes, please be very critical about the things you say. I strongly believe that words and speaking is an action, mm-hmm, and, like, mm-hmm, dealing with the consequences of that action, you're responsible for.
Yeah, well, it's like the thing. Someone was telling me about how in journalism, because you're supposed to, you know, give two sides to every story, but, like, so when they report on climate change, the way they have to kind of frame it.
Mm-hmm.
Frame it is like, yeah, and then on the other fake science side,
yeah, uh-huh,
and it's like, that's making it seem like it's a two-sided,
yeah,
issue.
Yeah, some things, mm-hmm, Nazis are bad. That is not political. Mm-hmm. It's just like,
and not according to Widener University.
Oh.
Not according to Tufts either.
Oh, yeah, Tufts has a weird sudden, maybe not so sudden.
Maybe not so sudden.
Yeah, sudden. Well, it feels like all of a sudden. I'm like, where'd you guys come from?
I did see in one of the rooms in the campus center, there's a bunch of old photos. And one of the photos hanging up is, it's from 1983, I believe, maybe 1973. And it's a bunch of students holding hands on a snowy day. And apparently there was a big action against racism. It was just explicitly, like, Tufts against racism. And, like, I think people might have encircled the whole campus holding hands.
Ooh.
I think that'd be super cool to do again. I will, mm-hmm, consult my activist friends and maybe, mm-hmm, see what we can organize. I think this campus needs something unifying, and I think people have forgotten how bad it is to be a bad person.
There's a very weird string of, like, there's been, like, the three things that happened here. There was, like, some slur on, like, a whiteboard in one of the buildings at, like, my college. Like, very bad time for where people are getting bold.
It's interesting what you said, Noah, about unifying the university, because speaking of the homecoming that inspired this homecoming episode, mm-hmm, the actual homecoming event, I just feel like there are two different Tufts.
I completely agree.
Like, when, mm-hmm, you see the homecoming version of Tufts, I'm like, who are these people? Yeah. Do I even go to school with them? Like, it feels like a very,
when
like,
I see people at parties, or I don't really go to parties, when I see people walking and I'm like, you were just at a party because they're all decked out, I'm like, I've never seen you in any of my classes.
I know. I'm like, who are you people? I went to the, you know, Tufts has a, has like a pub thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, has, there's like, sorry, Tufts does not have a pub. There's a pub near Tufts that has Tufts
Tufts students have claimed.
And that Tufts students have claimed. But they, I mean, to be fair, they, I mean, they bought into
they,
it.
Yeah, they pander.
But yeah, because they know it'll bring them money. But mm-hmm. Tufts Tuesday. So, of course, most Tuesdays I am doing homework mm-hmm. or studying or doing something.
Some people go to the pub every Tuesday.
I know. So one Tuesday.
Who has the time?
One Tuesday earlier in the semester when, mm-hmm. you know, it was kind of the semester hadn't really, really begun yet. My friends were like, gotta go. And I was like, okay, just this once I'll go. And I literally was like, is this even, these people don't go to my, there's no way these people go to Tufts.
Yeah.
There's no way. It felt like a whole day. I was like, and it was funny because my friend and I were saying, we were kind of lamenting about how none of, because we were all supposed to, you know, go find our person.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we were like, none of these people are our person.
Yeah.
Like, the people who are our people
are studying
are
right
studying
now.
Studying right
yeah.
now. Like, my future husband is not in the pub.
Mm-hmm.
He's studying right now.
Yeah, you need to.
In the Lilly Music Library,
How to find a boyfriend at Tufts. Go to study
the
sessions.
Lilly Music Library is where my man is.
I have a fun home fact. In Somerville, Massachusetts, where we are currently located, it is the home to the inventor of the Monster Mash, Bobby Boris Pickett. Isn't
oh
that exciting?
Gosh, that
good thing we don't
so
have to
exciting.
Listen to that because we're in Medford.
No, we're
actually,
listening.
We are in Somerville Bobby. Right now.
This is in Somerville?
I'm pretty sure the WMFO station is in Somerville.
Hold on, don't you worry.
don't
you worry.
But
also, doesn't all of our information
say Medford? Oh, I guess all of our information does say in Medford.
Oh, and doesn't this address that I have right here say Medford?
I don't really care. Okay, doesn't matter. We are feet, I think, meters from Somerville.
We are in Medford.
And so, I was actually introduced to not the Monster Mash, because this is Mona and Noah Save the World listeners, our last episode until after Halloween, because next
so
weekend
sad.
Is the very, very exciting live music
actually,
day, Saturday,
sad.
October
exciting.
26th, from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m., maybe even later. Maybe we will have, we'll see. All day long.
Wait, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m.?
Great live
so we
music.
Will have our show.
I thought in the email it said we would not. We will see.
We will see. We might
tune
here, we
in,
might
listen all day. It'll be a surprise. It'll be wonderful.
Yeah, you'll see if we're there or not.
I learned that there's actually, he made another song about monsters that is not the Monster Mash.
What?
This
Welcome
is
to my personal hell.
The Monster Rap by Bobby Pickett. Please enjoy.
Same dude that did the Monster Mash.
That's my boy.
Shock my body. up from his nap's head.
Teach me how to monster rap.
You gotta shock the body. Shock the body, body. Shock the body. Shock the body, body. Shock the body. Shock the body, body. Shock. Igor, you fool.
Yes, Master.
He's breaking loose. We've reached a goal undreamed of by science. Listen, he's going to rap again.
I got bolts in my neck, a flat top head. I'm 8 feet tall and I'm back from the dead. You see, I can break rappers down to tears, cause I've been muscle rapping for 100 years. They all light up the torches, chase me through the town. They do everything, trying to track me down, but they can't keep up, they can't compete, cause I got to rap with a monster beat. You see, north, east, west and south, I'm the cat they call Monster Mouth. When I party rap, I control the room. I can get the werewolves howling at the moon. You see, I'm big and bad, scarred and mean. I'm the cool brain child of Dr. Frankenstein. I said a rap, rap, another zap. Can't stop the rapping now.
He won't stop rapping. Strap him down, Igor. He must be heavily sedated.
Yes, Master.
Oh, shut up.
I personally think we should get rid of the Monster Mash and replace it with that, because yeah, that is a legend.
That, I can't believe that the Monster Mash is so, so, so popular, and I've never heard of that before in my entire life.
The world is like, missing out.
How does that happen? Like, how does one of them become super famous and the other that sounds very similar?
Fair.
But yet so different.
And so iconic.
Like, why have I never heard that before?
It's big media. Mainstream media is suppressing the monster rap. I hope everybody could get into some good Halloween vibes.
Yes. What are you guys going to be for Halloween?
I want to be Isaac Newton.
Classic.
No. I'll be drunk. I don't know.
Jack, not on air.
Not on air. Not on air. Yeah, I really want to be Snow White.
Very
but
nice.
We'll see. I either want to be Snow White or I want to be Moana.
Interesting.
Ooh.
Each has their own special
Monana.
Challenge.
Be both simultaneously.
Think, yeah.
Yeah, split down the middle.
Split down the middle.
Ooh.
I think my idea for being Moana was to just like put an A on my stomach.
Wow.
And then when you ask me what I was, I'd be like, Moana.
Funny. Funny, yeah, for sure.
It wouldn't work for people who didn't know me.
True. But they're irrelevant.
Yeah, if you don't know me, do you even go here? If you don't know me, you're part of the other Tufts.
Yeah, the other
Tufts. That goes to the pub and religiously celebrates homecoming.
This is Moana and Noah Save the World. And you're listening to 91.5 FM WMFO Medford Tufts Freeform Radio. It has been a great hour.
Such a great hour. So good to be back in our home.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me.
You are part of our home.
Hopefully our conversation was somewhat on topic.
Oh, fully was just,
enough.
Yeah.
I had a good time.
I had the best time.
I had a very good time.
To close out, we have a song about West Virginia that was written by the writer had never been to West Virginia before, I would like to say.
Nonetheless, the song is about West Virginia.
I'm getting a lot of hate, despite being the only person here from West Virginia.
Country roads.
Take me home, country roads.
No, I didn't do it right.
Listeners, please, please enjoy.